You're currently listening to Onyx and the World of Oil Derivatives.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to Onyx Insight, a reporting and analysis service that focuses particularly on the oil swaps market. The service comes in a form of daily WhatsApp updates, trading window reviews, monthly reports, and liquidity and volatility assessments. All our information is derived directly from our trading floor of Onyx Commodities, the number one liquidity provider of oil swaps globally. There's no service like ours, providing expert analysis across the barrel and reporting in real time for those with real skin in the game. To find out more information and sign up to our free trial, visit our website at www.onyxcapitaladvisory.com or Google Onyx Advisory Insight. Also, please be sure to check out our LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook.
Hi everyone, welcome to another podcast with the Onyx team. So I'm Greg Newman, CEO of Onyx Capital Group, and with me today is Rich Rawlingson, who is the head of commercial, Onyx Advisory. So this is a very relevant podcast for him. This is what he's dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and that is hedging. So this podcast is all about what is hedging. We're just going to start from the top and...
Let's go completely top level, I think. Let's not overcomplicate it, because that's ultimately the issue that we're dealing with. Because we have utility companies, we have corporations, so forget everything. Greg, what's hedging?
Right, okay.
Please.
So, hedging is about fixing, locking in your cash flow. It's about certainty in your cash flow. That's where you have to start, no matter what product it is, whatever you're exposed to that has a variance in its future price. You are locking in that forward price with a derivative in order to provide certainty for your cash flow. To make it even more simple, and to use oil as an example, you are mimicking your physical price with derivatives. So if you have a physical deal, physical price exposure in the future, then you're using a derivative to perfectly, or as close as you can to perfectly, mimic that exposure.
Okay.
So is that granular enough, or is...
That seems pretty top level. Seems good.
So just quickly, and we're going to talk about it a bit more as we go, as we keep going. But you know, the general problems start right at the beginning. People thinking hedging is about something completely different. People thinking, if I'm hedging, then I should be making money. It is not an area to generate independent revenue. It's there on the financial statement just as a reference as to your cash flow that's coming from the derivatives, but there should be a reference to where you're making the saving on the physical to adjust that. That needs to be clear. And I think there's a lot of issues around there of which we will talk about as we go on. So second thing is,
I think we want to know who does it.
Who does it?
From my perspective, for my my connections out there.
Who
should be doing it. That's the point that quite a lot of people are.
For
years, I've said a line that the UK is... I've worked in foreign exchange, guys, for all the listeners out there beforehand. So I've done a lot of forward contracts, which now I'm learning to know is a bit more risk management rather than actual hedging. So that the companies that we now deal with at Onyx Advisory or in the corporate capacity would be, that do proper hedging, would be utility companies.
For an example, so you have your traditional producers who produce the crude, produce the products, you have your traditional consumers, the end users. But I think it's pretty misunderstood that there's quite a few more levels to it. Like the end user is not just the refiner who buys the crude and the oil trader who buys the products that come out of the refinery and then sells it to market. You know, there's people who are the final end users, of which there are so many. I mean, think about oil in particular. It's everywhere.
I've got one straight off the top of my head would be, I had a lovely hot chocolate this morning. It was cold outside. And I'm thinking that Costa Coffee, that Starbucks coffee company, they have hundreds of thousands of trucks on the road. So not only how they produce their product, but how they get their product to market. So they'll have dual exposure that needs to be hedged, right?
Well, that is a great example. So Costa, let's say. So they've got... they need to bring in their equipment, their resources, etc. on a consistent basis. So given we're an island, we talked about this earlier, we're an island, we import a lot of things, we're a net importer. So as the price of oil varies, or actually in this context we should look at diesel, because the majority of the road vehicles or road freight that companies are using to import their resources, that's exposure to the diesel price. So as diesel moves up or down, then that affects the price of or their margin, at least, in the companies. So you might think, yeah, but there's no point hedging, because what they do is they just pass it on to the consumer. Okay. And that's absolutely right. That's exactly what happens right now. And you probably wouldn't notice the difference. You certainly wouldn't notice the difference on your coffee day to day, but you can be sure that the company is going to have variances in their cash flow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not something they have to do, and they probably rather not do it because it's something they don't fully understand, etc. But that's a shame, because really you can stay ahead of the competition, right?
Yeah.
You know you have exposure to diesel. You know that if diesel rises quite significantly, then suddenly the importing cost is going to be higher, and suddenly it's going to be harder to get, and it's going to impact your bottom line. So by hedging, you can be quite ahead of the game. But that's, you know, that's a very granular level.
Yes.
But we've got people who aren't hedging all the way at the top, who directly use oil. So, you know, I think a lot of people know airlines are one of the bigger hedges, essentially, because they're such a big percentage of their operating cost is fuel. But how they're hedging is another thing entirely, and I think it comes back to the first definition, that they're not getting that right, and we need to kind of start there and move on. But just to give you, you know, another example, you know, we're looking today, weren't we, this morning, we're talking about IMO and the regulation changes in shipping that's coming in 2020. It's such a big deal, because it's as much as 30 to 50% of the operating cost, the fuel they use. So the price and the contract and the actual thing they use and the managing of that price exposure is so important that it can make or break the company.
Yeah.
So for them not to take it unbelievably seriously, it, of course, is a mistake. And it's kind of shocking to see how badly these companies deal with it. So I guess that's quite a nice way to lead on. So, you know, the derivative market is there to hedge. That's why it exists. You'd be forgiven for thinking it's become something different, it's a different animal, because there's so much speculation now, there's so much retail trading, there's all these trades that go on in the exchange and the oil exchanges that have actually nothing to do with hedging these days. But remember, that is why it's there, is to provide a forward price that you know, end users, consumers, producers can use to lock in to provide certainty to their cash flow. You can't forget that. So I think from that point of view, it's really key, I think, to say, well, to begin with, Rich loves talking about this, where does your actual...
Okay, let me say it, guys. So I have a 10-stage procurement module that I've run for years. And this clearly states, at what point do you acknowledge, in my case, it used to be foreign exchange, so now oil, or just exposure, let's call it. So at what point do you acknowledge exposure in either your P&L or in your procure-to-pay process? Now, if you want me to, just to riff on that a couple of minutes. So let's just say we're going to start a business and we're going to import any product from another country. So if we go to China and we go and find a supplier in China, predominantly that supplier wants to be paid in dollars. But also we're going way far ahead of ourselves. We've got to find the supplier. We have to come back and get an approval from our boss that the supplier has the right, you know, the right manufacturing requirements, ISO 9001, whatever it would be. We then have to raise a purchase order. Once the purchase order is then raised, we then have to wait for the good to be received. Now, in this case, it might be a very simple pen that we are buying from overseas, so that therefore the volatility in the time period would be lesser than if we were making handcrafted, ergonomically designed, bespoke chairs that take 18 weeks for delivery. And again, what happens if we do deliver the product and it's broken and we have to send it back? And then, and we've, just so you know, we went to China on the 1st of January. We've raised the purchase order in February. The goods have arrived in March, April, May. We've sent them back. They've come again. So now it becomes what? October the 14th. We still haven't paid for anything yet. And our consumer still doesn't really know, unless the price is fixed, what it's going to cost them. Because what the procure-to-pay methodology translates into action is, at what point are we saying we're buying a product for a penny or a pound and we're selling it for the equivalent in 8-10 months down the line? How you manage that volatility between it. I would always call it risk management on a forward contract. Because we don't necessarily mimic the physical, but your mimicking of the physical without going too deep into this, guys, would suggest, I'm thinking multiple hedges, multiple, if we have a business that has four different products, one in Australia, one in New Zealand, one in America, and one in China, I think we should then have four different currency hedges, because that's four different products that mimic, as it were, the physical that we're buying. Yeah. Is that what the Onyx Advisory methodology would be?
It's funny, I mean, just by your spiel there,
yes,
you can see how complicated people can make it.
15 years I've been doing it. Yeah.
And I think Rich comes to a point of understanding. Well, you know, but I'm just listening to you and thinking that can be very convoluted, all those things you're saying, and kind of, it's very easy to fear sell that and say, God, look how complicated hedging is.
Yeah.
You need to use us as a third party or as a bank or whatever, because it's too, look how many complexities there are. Well, actually, we don't agree here. I think we think it should be quite straightforward if you understand. So to the original question, right? So how or when do you kind of accept your exposure, or when that's what you're essentially saying. So for us, you know, bunker, airline, anyone really, as soon as you need the oil, whatever product it is for your business, when you budget for it, so you come into the year and a business will say, you know, I need X number of million barrels, whatever it has, depending on how big the company is, of oil to use for our operating costs. You budget it using the forward curve. You have to reference the price. You say, right now the price is this for calendar 20, and therefore we know how much volume we have, therefore we can work out how much we're going to spend on oil. At that point, you've now budgeted the whole company's operating and financial accounting on that price. So therefore, at that point, you have exposure to that price.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very much understood, and I think you can run into it. But at that point, so let's use an airline as an example. You are now short the price that you've set as your budget. So you've budgeted for $60 per barrel on jet fuel, for instance, for the whole of calendar 20 as an average. So you're now saying that if oil prices go up and jet fuel is now 62 barrels per barrel, then we are going to be negative, or it's going to impact negatively our cash flow. But as long as you hedge accurately and on a granular level to what you're actually need, then you shouldn't worry. We see all these things like, oh, volatility has impacted people's hedging. Why? The whole point of hedging is to lock it in. So you don't have to worry about volatility. You're completely locked in. But the issue comes for people not realizing that they are exposed as soon as they budget for that price. As soon as you budget for that price, the very next step should be, how do I get a hedge on to absolutely fix that in?
Yeah.
Managing that hedge in the future, okay, sometimes there can be some granularity, but again, we think that comes from not really fully understanding. So you have this kind of idea of, we have the exposure, and then Joe Bloggs third party says, well, why don't you have your cake and eat it too?
Yeah.
You know you need to buy 60. Why don't you do zero cost collars or some funky option structure that, you know, I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, but that's okay, because I'm the expert and you don't know, just give it to me. But let me tell you, if you do use us and you do use these complex structures, you'll make all loads of money on your hedging and you'll be fine on your physical. That's just a con. That is a lie. As soon as there's an element of you're not trying to mimic the physical, not trying to use a contract that perfectly aligns or as close to perfectly aligns to your physical exposure as possible, you are speculating.
Yeah.
So you've accepted that you've got this price that you, you've got this exposure, you've accepted the price on the forward curve. Right, now you've got to go execute the hedge. And the next common thing will happen is, so you've got jet fuel as an example. Right, let's buy Brent. Let's buy Brent crude futures, which you see in the news a lot. Let's buy call options on Brent. What's Brent got to do with jet fuel? Jet fuel pricing is a component of crude, but it's certainly not the whole thing. Jet fuel prices relative to Brent fuel, Brent crude futures, are roughly $18 per barrel at the moment, and that's not fixed. The difference between jet fuel and crude, jet fuel and crude, we call that a crack, and that crack can move violently itself. That can have, you know, a swing of $10 in a year. So to say I'm going to hedge my jet fuel with Brent is, you know, severely not taking into consideration what it is you need to do to fix your cash flow. Because what can end up happening is, you buy Brent, you know, in theory this could happen, you buy Brent as a hedge. Brent doesn't move all year, but jet fuel goes wild relative to Brent, which is, you know, more than feasible. It happens a lot. Yeah. And so suddenly you've lost on your hedge, or not made any money on your hedge, but you've lost on your physical. But if you'd gone in and bought a jet fuel swap, then, and made sure that the contract, the jet fuel swap, was pricing relative to a region that's close to where you're buying, or is the region that you're actually buying the physical, then you're absolutely sorted. Yeah. You're, whatever the price does, you don't care, because it aligns to 99%. So the whole point is you can ignore volatility. So whenever you hear this, oh, volatility is making hedging programs really difficult, well, then they're not hedging,
yeah,
because that's not the whole game. So this brings us quite nicely to what's your favourite saying?
It does. If you're not hedging, you're speculating. Simple as that. Greg's just reminded me of another buzzword that I've used before. It's around, excuse me, it's around the operational efficiency of how your, in this case, your oil exposure is derived. You know, what teams are talking, how the traders talk to the risk management committee, how the shareholders have an understanding that, as Greg said, this hedge is not going to either make, it may make or lose, it may. But fundamentally, it is there to protect the cash flow, the bottom line, and give you maximum
output. Right. So as soon as you go to point two, okay, but you've got this exposure, but as I say, this whole, you want your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
Like, you have that exposure, lock it in, and then if you want to speculate on the market,
okay,
do it. But we have to get this clear, because I'm not sure we're coming across as clear as possible. If you don't choose a contract that's as close, yeah, to the line as possible, then that's a form of speculation in itself, because you're gambling on the fact that whatever contract you do choose is going to closely mimic the,
yeah,
physical, but there's no guarantee of that unless it's very, very close. So as I say, if you use Brent instead of jet fuel, you're gambling that Brent's going to stay consistent,
yeah,
relative to jet fuel, which is a huge gamble. But then the second big thing is the percentage you hedge. So you hedge 20%. I mean, that's seen as like, yeah, yeah, I hedge 20%. What do you mean? You're not hedging then.
Yeah.
You're hedging a portion of it, and you're 80% speculating. And just
would we risk that?
Where the hell
are they even?
This,
yeah,
is what I want to get across, right? You're like,
sorry.
So, let's say you're 20% hedged,
yeah,
on 10 million barrels of,
okay,
jet fuel. So you now have 8 million barrel position,
yeah,
on the oil price. What do I mean? So you've hedged 20%, you've hedged 2 million barrels,
yeah,
of it, barrels, and that is locked in. So,
yeah,
the 2 million barrels of physical that you will end up buying is locked in perfectly, or,
yeah,
close to 100% with the jet fuel swap. And now those 2 million barrel cash flow will be consistent with each other. You'll either,
okay,
gain or have savings on the physical and lose on the derivatives, or the other way around.
That's first, yeah.
But you have 10 million barrels. So now you're effectively saying, for that 8 million barrels that I haven't hedged, if you're a jet fuel buyer, then that means that you need the oil price to go lower for you to make a saving.
Yeah.
So if you haven't hedged, you're taking a short position on oil. And to be clear, the outright price of oil. You ask any oil trader in the market, the most volatile and dangerous contract to trade is the outright price. We trade differentials. And when I say we, I mean the whole market trades differentials. You have a flat price view, as we call it, outright price, flat price. Then that's usually a smaller proportion of your risk. Hedge funds, look, it tends to be more of what they do, but they are, generally speaking, quite risk on. But from the oil trading world, we're all about trading the cracks, the differentials, the time spreads. You know, it's very ballsy to start trading the outright price direction. It's very difficult,
yeah,
to get right. So to use this example, you've hedged 20% and you're taking an 8 million barrel short position in oil. Just to give it context, you know, a $30 barrel rally in crude in a year is, you know, I wouldn't say it's standard, but it happens quite,
yes,
frequently. You've got to expect that. You know, the Saudi Arabia attacks we had in September, that moved oil $10 just in the space of,
yeah,
a minute. Because of,
yeah,
it happening over the weekend, and oil essentially opened $10 higher. So $10, you just lost $80 million because you didn't hedge in this example.
Yeah.
But I guess the understanding is, yeah, I just didn't hedge, but that is now speculating. Is that coming across well?
It is, yeah, it is.
You're now short. It's not like, oh, it's okay, I'm hedging. You're not hedging. You're taking a selective position. I just don't think this is understood. And this is where a lot of these like losses and,
yeah,
oh, we didn't, the hedging program was difficult because the volatility comes in. No, you just didn't hedge.
Yeah. I think for me, I think businesses think that this is a, I don't want to say a big boy problem. I certainly don't want to gender this problem, but this is a big industry issue, you know. But my point is that No, this is an every business issue. With the UK being an island, right? I like a banana every now and then. They don't particularly grow well in Hull. I'm from Blackpool. Yeah? They don't grow well in Blackpool either. So I deal with a company, let's say, who goes and buys those bananas overseas in a different currency. So he's going to be hedging the price of bananas. I'll get to the point I'm making now, but there's a lot of businesses that I see, they're on the road every day. Yeah. And I'm now thinking, I'm dealing with more and more, so I can say them, because it's some of them way, you know, your FedExes, your UPSs, your DHLs, things like that. They have tens of thousands of drivers on the road every, they have tens of thousands of drivers on the road that have like fuel cards, you know, like the Eurofuel allowance, for example.
Yeah.
So what the hedging policy that Onyx would put in was, we amalgamate how many drivers you've got, roughly how many miles they do per annum, how many miles does that equate to roughly how much petrol, diesel, etc. they're going to use, and then we can say with a rough amount of certainty, not to 20%, maybe not to 100, but certainly to 90-95% accuracy, we're going to use X amount of petrol, diesel, oil this year. Let's hedge that exactly right now so we can go and give our shareholders the most amount of visibility and transparency possible. That's the Onyx way, right?
That's the Onyx way, but okay. I think there's a lot of work doing that. Okay, so what diesel prices specifically, you're talking about transport on the road, okay, so I'm already thinking, okay, well, what specifically are they exposed to? What type of diesel price?
Yeah.
There's diesel in the ARA Rotterdam, kind of Rotterdam, Amsterdam and Antwerp. That's the region where a lot of derivatives are priced for diesel. That would be where I can immediately think in the UK, that's where a lot of your price exposure will be. But if it's in the Mediterranean, there's Mediterranean prices, and the difference between Mediterranean and Northwest Europe can be quite significant.
Okay.
Is it the US heating on? Is it, so you have to get quite granular as to where your actual geographical exposure is, as well as your product exposure, because there can be huge price swings on all these levels. And we're going to get to that in future podcasts. It's something we call like managing the basis risk. You know, it's not just the outright price like crude, it's then the product like jet fuel, it's then the region, it's then the specification, and it can keep going more and more granular, with the objective being get as close to 100% accuracy to what you're actually exposed to as possible. I think that's the best way to put it. But I just got here, I'm just getting my phone up, because we had a, I'm just reading an article, this is September 25th, 2019. So it's still going on. Like, okay, oil prices have whipsawed this quarter, passing $76 a barrel, blah, 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 blah. The volatility has been a challenge for airlines, which have differing strategies on hedging against fuel costs. Well, if the volatility has been challenging for airlines, then they do not have a hedging strategy.
Yeah.
They have a, I don't know, let's call it, be nice to them. They have an offsetting policy.
Yeah.
They have a, it's not hedging in our definition, which is fixing cash flow. They are speculating in some form. So, okay, so let me read a bit more. Unfortunately, this is the CEO, so unfortunately, rising fuel prices outpaced our increase in revenues. They clearly didn't hedge even close to 100%.
Yeah.
And now we've got, if you read a bit further, hang on.
Yeah.
So, Southwest Airlines hedged more than twice its annual fuel consumption, and they did very well because the oil price went up. But hang on, why are they hedging twice? That's now taking, so let's say they had 10 million barrels, for that example, and they've got 10 million barrels exposure. They've hedged that, great, perfect, but they've gone and bought another 10 million. They put on a 10 million barrel speculative position on top of that. That's not hedging double your consumption. That's hedging plus adding a huge speculative position.
That's adding a speculative position.
I mean, this is happening with the biggest airlines in the world. Lufthansa is saying here that it hedges about 100% of its annual fuel consumption. Well, great. They seem to be doing it right, and, you know, that's perfect. Where they will get stung is when they're budgeting, you know, forward, and unfortunately they might have to, you know, accept a high price, but they have to. You can't just wait for oil prices to go down, or fingers crossed, and hope for it to go down.
That's where my treasury management and my finance directors, CFOs that I speak to, are much more concerned about that forward guidance and that budgeting. So just to give one example, I met a customer the other week, and he had business A, and there was a competition, a competitor had an equally the same, you know, exactly the same business, but one competitor didn't hedge, and one competitor did hedge. So the competitor that didn't hedge, and guess what happened? The prices went away from him on the oil industry, which derived part of the price of his product, right? Take an airline, for example. So what this gentleman had two options. He had to raise the price of his product to his customers. That didn't make him particularly competitive in the marketplace. And guess what? The customers went elsewhere. Or option two, don't raise the price and sell your product at a loss, to which point his bank then started to say, we can no longer you know, facilitate a loss leader. We're not Tesco selling milk here. If you're selling one product to the market, you can't really be selling at a loss. So just an example there, listeners, of industries, sort of treasuries within specific industries. Now, today, it still happens.
Yeah.
You know, not mimicking that physical, not getting that full transparency of your exposure, and just generally overcomplicating.
Well,
what
I think it's just the tone, I think, still wrong. Like, I'm just reading more of this article here while I was listening.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, Ryanair, Michael O'Leary, CEO, we are now hedged at 90% out to September 19 at 68. That's a much stronger position than our competitors. Da, 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 da. And then it goes on to say the article, he made these comments just before oil plunged back to 50, meaning that Ryanair now will be committed to paying $18 more than the spot price. There's no problem with that. They're making the savings on the physical, and they've offset it, but they know their operating costs. They know how to run their business. They're very good at running an airline business. So don't start getting in the speculation game. You know, 90% is not bad. It should be higher, but, you know, these guys are all talking about our competitors are hedged like this and we think ours is better. They're acting like oil traders. Yeah. I'm telling you guys, the best oil traders in the world, and I mean the best in the world, they are looking for a 55 to 60% win-loss ratio. Yeah. So in every 10 trades they do, they only need about 6 of them to go in their favor, because with the right tradecraft, and the right risk management, like actually managing your position sizings, complex trading kind of tools around position taking, which is a hugely complex thing to do and require a lot of experience, they don't get it right most of the time or a lot of the time. So why are these airlines, and this is not just airlines, this is anyone who hedges, bunkers, utilities, like we're saying, why are they taking a view like they can beat the market on the price? Just look at the forward price. If it budgets and it's a good enough budget relative to their operating costs, etc., then you should be locking it in, hands down. To be fair, there might be scenarios where we say, look, we literally can't run our business at that price. But still, imagine telling a shareholder, look, we're going to gamble on the oil prices this year, which is effectively what they're doing by not hedging, because we hope it's going to go down and then we'll be in the money.
Yeah.
Do they not realize the opposite of that is the oil price keeps going up, or whatever it is you're exposed to, and then not only is your business not able to run, it's also going to close down because you just have nothing. I mean, it's quite frightening, but I think the crux of what we're saying here is the tone and the message, and it's been A, delivered wrong, and B, received wrong. It's like that hedging and derivatives is this something you can be strategic about and outmaneuver. It is an incredibly complex thing to do.
Yeah.
And as I say, the best oil traders in the world aren't getting it right. So what gives you the right as a kind of consumer of oil in some way, or even a producer who's not an oil trader, to say, I know where the oil price is going? You definitely don't. So that will leave that point there. I think I'm aware we're kind of talking quite a lot, but I think it's a good, you know, we're making the points that we want to make.
It's a fantastic point. I just want to labour that if you're not hedging, you're speculating.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point we're going to acknowledge it in our P&L? We're going to look at that procure to pay process, and this is where I want for the listeners, the finance, the treasury guys out there, to not think that they're getting that there's not a package solution off the shelf,
right?
Because we do need to go granular, because each Onyx situation is bespoke. It is specific to product, region, contract. So,
but that's why you need a third party. You know, if you don't know it yourself and you need advice, of course you should go out and get an expertise advice. But you need to be clear about what they're doing. They're not, you know, if you have this whole cake and eat it too thing and you've been sold on that basis, that is absolutely wrong. You need to be clear about what we're doing. Our expertise comes in fitting the right contract, eliminating the basis kind of idea, which I referred to earlier, which is this whole mimicking of physical. We're trying to, our job is to get that hedge as accurately as possible linked to your physical exposure, and that is it. And don't get me wrong, there's an element of expertise that's required in that, but we don't want to make it complex, like we're trying to, you know,
whatever,
reinvent the wheel. We are just trying, that's all we're doing, and if anyone tells any different, well, I'm sorry, but it's a con. Right. Big point, I think, that needs to be said also, and kind of how it's currently being done in general across the market. So you talked about risk management.
So
let's say a company does completely accept philosophically the idea of hedging.
Yeah.
Then they say, right, I need a derivative unit, which is one way to go. And you get some traders or one trader or a team together and say, right, just hedge our exposure. But, you know, you're trusting them to kind of evaluate your, you know, independently evaluate the exposure, choose the right contract, and then execute it. And this is a big thing that I would be surprised at if many people understood, because obviously it's the oil trading element, which, you know, is quite niche. But if you say to a trader, come in and risk manage my cash flows, and by doing that, you're going to hedge.
Yeah.
Because it's not really understood that well in terms of, you know, as we're talking about the tone, how it's received, etc. The trader goes, okay, this is fantastic.
Well, pay me for that.
So you're going to pay me for that, of course, that's fair. But then you're going to give me an incentive, and I'm going to argue that I need an incentive package to then generate revenue out of my hedging. Now, that is incredibly dangerous, because what they're effectively saying is, right, if I generate revenue and I'm going to get a percentage out of this, a percentage which equates to a bonus, then I'm going to do very well personally. So why would I do anything other than speculate on the market? They're not incentivized to lock in a hedge and just kind of say, well, that's perfectly, you know, that's fixed the cash flow. They're not incentivized to do that. They're incentivized to say, whatever I'm given as an exposure from the oil price, if I think it's going to go that way, then I'll just leave it unhedged. Or if I think it's going to go higher or whichever way you're talking about, then I'm going to double up the exposure. But they're given free rein because you're kind of trusting. You've got to, there's a big element of trust here. And there's so many examples of traders or companies reporting losses from mishedging or actually worse than that. It's not even, because saying you've mishedged is actually quite accurate. You haven't hedged.
Yeah.
So saying you mishedged, okay, fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
But they say, no, it's our hedging, our hedging strategy didn't work because of volatility. That makes no sense.
No.
What happened was the person who was in charge of the hedging had a go,
speculated,
had used it as a free option because, you know, what's his downside? He just goes, the volatility, and, you know, I still have a job. But the upside is, does really well, he or she, makes a lot of money, and then it gets a fat bonus at the end of the year. That is the wrong, if you're just trying to hedge and you're just trying to lock in exposure, the incentive needs to be right. This is something a treasury department should be doing.
Yeah.
It's a middle office thing. It's not a speculative thing. You should be getting it right. You should be getting clear about what you're doing. And if you want to speculate on top of that, look, that's fine, but be absolutely aware. So I think we're just making the point that quite commonly we see traders abusing the hedging mandate, and they're kind of using the lack of clarity and understanding of hedging as a fancy way to basically avoid scrutiny when they're actually speculating. So that's rife, and that's something that at Onyx we would completely deter from. It and it just comes about transparency. Mm. Do you agree, Rich? You're in FX.
Yeah.
You know quite a bit about hedging, but you're not an oil expert.
Absolutely not.
But you come here and learn about what we do, and you can understand it because we're not here trying to bamboozle people. It's not we're doing something overly complicated. So I think that has to be the mantra. You have to. Anyone who's going to do this has to understand that you're putting a huge amount of financial exposure to your company at risk. So you need to be aware of what's happening, how it's happening.
The one thing the FX comparison would be that finance and treasury function is aware that there is a specialist in the market. So what used to happen was FDs, you know, they'd have, as Greg said, you've got your financial controller, your finance director, your accounts payable, your accounts receivable, and they all are very, very, you know, competent in their respective field, but they're not an expert. You know, it's like a bit of a master of all but a jack of none.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Onyx methodology would be, this is our area of expertise. You know, don't ask me about foreign exchange. I can talk to you about it, but I certainly don't profess to no longer be the industry narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Onyx model now is, this is the narrative. This is 100% of our business, oil, mm-hmm. its exposure, its implications on the corporate mm-hmm. balance sheet, the P&L. People's jobs and livelihoods are at risk here. Yeah. This is where you can tell my speed of voice picks up a bit, because I feel really passionate about it. People are being left behind and or they're then being hoodwinked. And it's that sweet spot between that. Certainly don't want to hoodwink you. If you still want to go and do what you've always done, fine, but at least I've made you aware of the possible implications.
Exactly. And what you're doing and so I think that's a great, great, great way to end it.
It is.
I love the passion coming out, because I'm exactly the same. This needs to be disruptive. It just needs to be seen as a positive thing. If it's done right, God, it's such a good thing for businesses.
Well, I'll take a phone call off anyone, anytime. There's going to be details, likes, comments, share at the bottom of this.
That's a good point.
I can take any call, field them from any industry, anytime.
Guys, thanks very much for listening. And I hope you'll stay tuned, and there'll be more podcasts on this, more granularity around hedging, but also a range of other topics as well. So thanks very much for listening, and see you next time.
See you next time. Thank you.